Hello, everybody. This is Brian Tracy. We're going to have a wonderful time. We're going to talk about one of the most important subjects in the whole world. Welcome to Rapid Learning Made Simple. This is one of the most important subjects you'll ever learn. Peter Drucker said before he died, he said that the only skill that will not be obsolete in the 21st century will be the skill of learning new skills. And what we know is that the major difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is successful people know more than unsuccessful people. They have more knowledge, they have more skills. Sometimes just one piece of information that you've picked up through reading, learning, attending courses or programs, or talking to people, one piece of information can transform your entire life. It can give you a special insight that enables you to make a decision one way or another that can change the direction of your career. So continuous learning is the minimum requirement for success in the 21st century. The challenge is that in school, the learning process in school is so terrible, so boring, and I'll come to that in a couple of seconds, that most people, when they're in school, think, thank God this is over. I'll never learn another thing as long as I live. We think of being out of school and being able to just get on with our lives as though we've just been through a terrible experience. And the wonderful thing is that learning is one of the most enjoyable things in the world if you do it right. There's a lot of research that shows that whenever you learn a new piece of information that you can use to improve your life in some way, it actually releases endorphins in your brain, and endorphins make you happy. They're called nature's happy drug. They stimulate you, and they make you feel more positive about yourself and about your life. So our job, just like aerobic exercise makes you feel terrific, our job is to learn how to learn and learn easily and well. Now here's the good news, is you are a potential genius. When I say this, and I've discussed this with my friends who teach super learning all over the world, the word potential is the critical word. It's interesting, Michael Jordan was once asked, wasn't it nice to be born with the natural talent for basketball? And he said, everybody has talent, but ability takes hard work. So you're a potential genius, but you have to unlock the genius. The good news is that you have had proof of this throughout your life. Every so often, you've come up with a great idea or a great insight, or you've made a great decision, or you've been able to do something really well, and you said to yourself, wow, I mean, that was really neat. The difference between you and superior people just do it all the time. It's just like knowing how to use a computer or use a typewriter. They just do it all the time. So your job is to learn how to do it all the time. You have the ability to learn and remember at 2 times, 3 times, and 5 times your current rate. You just need to learn how. Learning is like riding a bicycle. Once you master the process, you can do it over and over, easier and easier. In fact, there are specialists who will take a person out of the audience who cannot memorize even their names of their friends' wives, and will put them through a memory course and bring them back 30 days later in front of the same audience and sit them on the stage. I've heard of this just once, where they'll give them a telephone book, and the person will sit there on the stage while the memory expert is doing a series of exercises with the audience. And the person will go through and memorize the names and numbers from a particular page of the Los Angeles telephone directory. After about half an hour, 45 minutes, they will then take the page and they can give that person any name and he'll remember the number, any number and he'll remember the name. And this is a person with limited memorization skills at the beginning. He just learned how. Now, I'm not saying you and I can learn that quickly, but it's definitely doable. Wonderfully enough, the more you learn, the more you can learn. Your ability to learn is like a muscle. It increases in strength the more you use it. But you know, it also says that if you don't use it, you lose it. One of the great challenges that we have today is that many people don't use their brain at a high level. They use their brain sort of at a low level. You've heard it said that the average person uses 10% of their potential. Well, according to the Stanford Brain Institute, it's closer to 2%. The average person just sort of coasts through life, uses their mind, get up, watch TV, read a little newspaper, you know, chat with friends, listen to music on the radio while they're going to work, and so on. And what happens, it's like not using your muscles for an extended period of time, is they become softer and flabbier, and they start to atrophy, and you lose that speed of learning, that quick ability to recognize situations and to make decisions. Interesting, if you've ever been to college or taken advanced courses, you have to study like crazy to get through them. You have to read very complex textbooks and then write tests and so on. Sometimes, later in life, you go back and you look at the stuff that you wrote during the time you were in college when your mind was just energized with high intelligence, and you're amazed at the stuff you did back then that you couldn't do today. But here's the good news. At any age, you can start to turn on the light switches throughout your brain. You can activate brain cells into the 80s, as a matter of fact, which means that you can actually become smarter. For many years, there was a belief that people's brain cells started to die out at a certain age. What they're finding is that brain cells regenerate continuously all your life. And there are things you can do that we'll talk about to increase the number of brain cells you have, to regenerate brain cells, so you actually become smarter and smarter and develop the ability to learn and retain information. Now, according to brain expert Tony Buzan, he says your brain contains 100 billion cells, and each is connected and interconnected by what are called dendrites. Each are connected to 20,000 other cells. The possible numbers of thoughts that you can think is the number one, followed by 8 pages of rows of zeros, more than all the molecules in the known universe. Imagine that. Your ability to think is so extraordinary, and most people use it to get to and from work. What we've also found is that your IQ is malleable over 25 points. What does that mean? It means that you can increase it. You can increase your brain power from average to extraordinary, and even into the genius range, by what is called pumping mental iron. That means by working your brain. I call this the Schwarzenegger effect. When you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger with his big muscles, you don't attribute his bodybuilding success to luck. You don't say, oh, isn't it lucky he was born with all those muscles? You know that he worked out strenuously on his body for many years to develop his physique. And your brain is the same. Just as your muscles get bigger when you work out and put a strain on them, and more brain cells are created when you concentrate and stretch your thinking ability. So, here are the definitions of intelligence. Let's consider the three biggies. Number one, intelligence is a way of acting. If you act intelligently, doing things that help you to achieve your goals, you are using your brain at its highest potential level. And by the way, one of the great motivations for learning is to learn how to achieve your goals faster and easier and with greater predictability. A second definition of intelligence is that intelligence is the ability to improve things. Your ability to find ways to do things better, faster, or cheaper is a hallmark of great intelligence. And again, by doing things faster, better, and cheaper, you improve the quality of your life. A third definition that I like is intelligence is the ability to solve problems effectively. You become an excellent problem solver by focusing on the solution rather than the problem. You know, you can increase your IQ just by becoming solution-oriented. Whenever there's a problem, you say, what's the solution? What can we do? What actions can we take now? You see, when you think with positive emotions, more of your brain lights up, like turning up a light switch or a dimmer switch. When you become negative or angry and worry about the problems and who's to blame, your brain shuts down and falls back on what is called your limbic or emotional system. One of the most important things you do is you keep yourself positive when you're learning, because you can learn several times faster when you're positive and relaxed than you can when you're tense or angry. Now, here's some great research. Nobel Prize winning breakthrough research from Harvard says that you are a potential genius in one or more areas of your different intelligences. Professor Howard Gardner at Harvard wrote a book some years ago called Frames of Mind, which just completely tipped over an enormous number of people. What he said is that you have several intelligences, not just one or two that are tested in school. You have several intelligences, any one of which can enable you to achieve greatly. So let me just go through the intelligences and you think about these yourself. Number one, you have verbal intelligence. Now, verbal intelligence is facility with words and word meanings. It's a good vocabulary. It's the ability to write things out clearly and to speak well. You see this form of intelligence in people who are top-selling authors, poets, script writers, plus, of course, actors who speak well, politicians who speak well, salespeople and business people who speak well, and professional speakers who speak well. So the ability to work well with words requires, first of all, that you learn a lot of words. But if you have high verbal intelligence, you seem to absorb words like a sponge absorbs water, and then that you use these words clearly and articulately. The second type of intelligence is mathematical intelligence. This is the ability to work well with numbers. It's a requirement for people in economics, accounting, engineering, science, and other areas, and of course business for financial statements and cost accounting and pricing and so on. Now, here's what we know, is that virtually all education, all IQ tests, even the SAT for university placements, is based on verbal and mathematical intelligence. All the rest are just relegated or forgotten. So you may not have been a genius in verbal or mathematical intelligence, but you could be a genius in some other areas. The third type of intelligence is musical. Now, musical intelligence is most often demonstrated by people who are extremely good at creating and playing music and singing. They can carry a tune. They can hear the different notes in a piece of music. They just love to listen to music. You see this with every type of singer, every single type of person who gets into music or enjoys music seems to have a high level of musical intelligence. A fourth type of intelligence, which you see, is athletic or kinesthetic intelligence. Some people are natural athletes, like Michael Jordan, or people who get into the major leagues. They have the ability to perform at excellent levels in certain sports. They have tremendous agility, tremendous coordination, and so on. And it's interesting, a person could be a musical genius like a Beethoven or a Mozart and go completely unnoticed in school. A person today with athletic intelligence, you can get scholarships, but basically athletic intelligence is a form of brain power that can open up all kinds of possibilities for people who may not be great at verbal or mathematical. Now, the fifth type of intelligence I want to talk about is really important. It's interpersonal intelligence. This is often called social intelligence. This is the most important intelligence of all for success in the modern world. And it's the highest paid of all intelligences. It's the ability to get along well with other people. It's the ability to communicate, to negotiate, to persuade other people to do things, to get people to help you to achieve your goals. And you see it in salespeople, business people, politicians, orators. Interpersonal intelligence is a kind of person who has a sensitivity to others. And this is the highest paid, most valued intelligence of all. People with high levels of interpersonal intelligence, which may not be even measured in school except for the words in the bottom of your report card that says, gets along well with others. Social intelligence is actually the most important of all. And in that area, virtually everybody listening to this program is a genius or a potential genius. And wonderfully enough, if you have the natural ability in this area, you can, like riding a horse in the direction that it's going, you can develop your intelligence in this area from average to above average to extraordinary levels. Now, a sixth form of intelligence identified at Harvard is called intrapersonal intelligence. This type of intelligence is demonstrated when you have a good sense for yourself and for what you want and think and feel. This is a common intelligence of leaders in every area. Leaders know and trust themselves. They have a good sense for themselves. They can make good decisions for themselves. And you can't even see it on the outside, but it's a form of genius as well. A seventh form of intelligence is artistic intelligence. This is the ability to perform well as a painter, a sculptor, a designer, an architect, or anything that requires the ability to create objects for other people to see. Many people have wonderful artistic ability, and it's never measured in school. There's another intelligence, number eight, it's called visual spatial intelligence. And this is the ability to see special relationships among items, such as those by architects, engineers, builders, and so on. It's also the ability to perceive depth, distances, and relationships between objects. For example, men are considered in general to have better visual spatial intelligence than women. That's why they can fly, drive racing cars, and so on, because they're very, very alert to the subtle differences of distances and so on. And now the ninth intelligence I wanted to talk about is entrepreneurial intelligence. Entrepreneurial intelligence is the ability to see opportunities for making money in a competitive economy by combining products and services together that can be sold at a price that is much higher than the cost of the individual ingredients. Now, 80% of self-made millionaires in America are entrepreneurs. They're entrepreneurs because they saw that you could take this ingredient and that ingredient and combine it with something else and create a product that's worth two or three or four or even 10 times the cost of the individual ingredients. You could then sell it and make a profit and then do it over and over again. Many people have entrepreneurial intelligence and entrepreneurial ability, but it's not developed to a high level. Sometimes they do garage sales or go to swap meets, or maybe they'll get into an MLM or network marketing company, but they don't realize that they have inherently an entrepreneurial intelligence that could be developed to genius levels and make them wealthy. And if you combine entrepreneurial intelligence with social intelligence, the ability to see business opportunities and the ability to sell, well, you can accomplish extraordinary things, and this is never measured. So you could be sitting there on a fortune without even knowing it. The 10th kind of intelligence is called abstract intelligence, and this is the ability to see relationships between unrelated objects. This is demonstrated by Einstein when he imagined riding on a beam of light and developed his theories of relativity, which were, of course, levels of genius that were unbelievable. Einstein worked in the post office in Zurich, Switzerland, and had a very bureaucratic, pedantic life until he began to have these abstract ideas, E equals MC squared, which changed the entire 20th century. And you may have that incredible ability to see special relationships in your life that could make you successful. Now, what you can do is you can give yourself a grade of 1 to 10 in each of these areas of intelligence. And what you would then have is an intelligence profile, a clear idea of your special combination of intelligences. By the way, you will find that throughout your life you are drawn into areas of activity where you have a natural ability to do well. You have a natural ability to excel. You're kind of drawn like a magnet into those areas for which you have been specially designed to perform at high levels. Here's an interesting point. Most entrepreneurs and salespeople do poorly in school. They have the equivalent of what they call ADD or ADHD, attention deficit disorder. Their minds are moving so quickly that they have a hard time paying attention to teachers. They act out in class. They often get graded badly for their behavior. This just means that standard teaching methods, focusing on rote learning of verbal and mathematical subjects, is not stimulating or appropriate for entrepreneurs and salespeople. Fortune magazine and Forbes have done some studies recently. They find that many of the wealthiest and most successful men and women in America have been diagnosed with dyslexia and other learning disabilities. Nonetheless, by maximizing their personal combination of intelligences, they've gone on to accomplish great things, become millionaires and billionaires and heads of major companies by using the intelligences that were never recognized. Now, here's the requirements for rapid learning. You want to learn subjects quickly and retain them permanently. Number one, you must have an intense desire to learn a particular subject. This was the problem in school, is in school you had pretty no interest in most of the subjects. And without that desire, which is the catalyst that kind of electrifies and activates your learning ability, without that desire, nothing happens. And so here are the keys to intense desire. There's four. First of all, the subject that you want to learn as an adult must be relevant to your life. In other words, it must be a relevant subject. You must see that this is important to me. Second of all, it must be applicable. You must be able to use the new information immediately. I remember when I first went to Mexico, I couldn't speak Spanish. So I got a book called Spanish Made Simple, and I was driving, and I stopped, and I took 5 hours aside, and I sat down in the back of my truck, and I studied Spanish for 5 hours. I had a special method of learning, which I'll talk to you about in a second. And after 5 hours, I got out and I was speaking Spanish. And from that time onward, I lived and spoke in Mexico. And mind you, I studied for many, many hours after that, but I had the basic language. I had the basic pronunciation. I had the basic words, the basic questions, the basic numbers, so I could ask how much is that, and I could recognize it when they answered. Where is? ¿Dónde está? And I would ask that, and they would tell me where it was, and I would be able to recognize the answer. So it was immediately applicable, and this is important. That's why, you know, you study languages in school. You ever had that experience? And you may have taken an entire year, spent countless hours, written exams, and if you ever go to that country, you can't speak a word. Why? It's because you couldn't apply it. Very important point, and I tell this to people all the time, is don't waste a second learning something you can't use immediately, because you'll forget 90% or more of it in no time at all, and all the time you spent trying to learn the subject will have been wasted. It's better to learn something that you can use immediately. Now, the third part of intense desire is it must be taught by an expert. It must be believable. When you're learning a new subject, you must respect the source. Whether it's a book, an audio program, a teacher, you must feel that this person really knows it. And finally, it must be fun. Learning is supposed to be enjoyable. Learning is not supposed to be painful. And the more you enjoy the learning experience, the faster you learn. I have taken multi-day courses in accelerated learning, rapid learning, and so on. And in these courses, everybody gets really active in the learning process. They get up, sit down, talk, change, move, explain, talk to other people, and so on. They draw posters, they make colors, they argue and debate. And it's amazing how this form of interactive learning dramatically increases the speed at which you learn a subject. Now, here's the second key to rapid learning. You must be in what is called a learning frame of mind. I learned in terms of physical fitness that it doesn't do you any good to work out if you're tired. If your muscles are tired and you work out, it doesn't do any good. Your muscles don't get any stronger. You build up lactic acid. It takes you much longer to recover and so on. The only time to work out is when you're thoroughly rested. When you feel really good about yourself, then you exercise. And it's the same thing with your mind. You should be rested and relaxed with no stress and having had plenty of sleep. The very best time to learn is when you're the most rested, because your brain is fully charged like a battery. It's functioning at its highest levels, and you can learn and retain stuff like iron filings to a magnet. You can just glom onto stuff and hold on to it. Sometimes you've had the experience when you're really well rested, you go to a party and you meet several people and remember all their names. And other times when you're tired or distracted, or it's the end of a day or the end of a week, and you go to a party and you meet people, you can't remember their names 3 seconds later. Now, you should be well fed with nutritious foods. Remember, your brain is like a great piece of machinery, and it runs on fuel. It runs on high-quality glucose. Your brain consumes 20% of all the calories in your body. Sometimes, by the way, if you're sitting studying for long periods of time and your body's not working but your brain is functioning, it can consume as much as 80% of the calories. It's almost like stepping your foot on the accelerator of a car and it goes faster and faster. Your brain just burns up enormous amounts of energy. That's why after a long period of doing brain work of any kind, studying or writing a proposal, your brain will be burned out. Your brain will be so tired you could barely think. You can't make a decision. What do you want to do for dinner? I have no idea. Your brain is completely burnt out. All the fuel, the glucose, burns out. So what you have to do is stop and completely rest and allow your brain to completely recharge. By the way, if you've had a really hard week and you have stuff that you've got to get done, one of the smartest things you can do is to take what I call a Sabbath. And a Sabbath starts at 6 o'clock on Friday night and goes to 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, 36 hours. And during that period of time, do not do a single thing that involves your brain. You can watch TV, go for a walk, go to a movie, go out for dinner, hang around, exercise, but do nothing that taxes your brain, even though you feel that you have so much to do and so little time. Then, when you start again on Sunday, your brain will be fully charged, and you'll go through all the work that you had to do in half the time and double the quality. If you've never done this before, just try it and you'll be astonished at how much more productive you are when you've allowed your brain to rest for 36 hours or sometimes more. Eat brain foods on a regular basis. Eat fish, soy products if you're a vegetarian. Eat vegetables rather than fruits. Too many fruits, by the way, are not good for you because there's so much sugar in fruit. But vegetables are what are called complex carbohydrates. They contain sugar, but your body has to break them down for you to make use of them. And so it's a long, slow release of fuel into your system. And avoid fried stuff. Fried and deep fried stuff really is hard for your body to digest. And remember, we said before that 20% of your calories are consumed by your brain. Well, when you eat a meal that's hard to digest, all the blood in your body goes to your digestive system. And the first place it's pulled away from is your muscles and your brain. That's why after a big meal, you'll often feel drowsy and tired and sleepy. And why? It's because your brain has just been drained of blood. All the blood's rushed to your digestive system to break down the food. However, if you eat light, high-quality foods, your body requires much less blood and you remain alert and sharp for hours afterwards. There's a great book to read on this subject. It's called The Zone. And The Zone teaches you how to eat highly nutritious foods in such a way that you're bright and alert most of the time. Take omega-3. This is really important. Everybody's saying this. Omega-3 is like a food that supercharges your brain. The very best source of omega-3 are salmon oil capsules. You can take them and take them as prescribed. Take vitamin and antioxidant supplements as well. Remember, you don't get enough vitamins in your normal diet, so take additional vitamins. And finally, drink lots of water. Think upon your brain as though it were a reactor core. You know, a reactor core in a nuclear power plant requires enormous quantities of water to keep it cool. Well, your brain requires lots of liquid to be as sharp as it can possibly be. And finally, in a learning frame of mind, get lots of aerobic exercise. It's the most amazing darn thing, but aerobic exercise engorges your frontal lobe, which is the thinking part of your brain, with blood and increases your ability to learn and memorize. It actually stimulates the growth of new brain cells. You become smarter when you engage in aerobic exercise. Now, aerobic exercise, whether it's walking, running, cycling, swimming, has to be engaged in for more than 30 minutes. If you do that, then what happens is you become smarter and smarter and smarter. Now, use your three learning modalities. Your three learning modalities are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. And you use all three to varying degrees. Some people are intensely visual. They have to see something in order to register it. Now, what we know is there's 22 times the number of nerves from the eye to the brain as from the ear to the brain. So that means that something that you see has 22 times the impact in terms of learning and retention versus something that you just hear. Second of all is auditory. And if you're going to learn, and many people are auditories, they don't really care about seeing it, but they're very, very good at hearing. The learning must be clear, with clear discussions and review and explanations. So sometimes with auditory, you hear it and you repeat it to yourself. One of the things I encourage people to do in listening to a CD when they're driving around is to stop and repeat an important point. When you stop it and repeat it, you actually transfer it from your short-term memory to your long-term memory. And the third way of learning is kinesthetic, moving around, standing up, trying things out, writing them down, drawing pictures, any kind of physical movement. And a lot of people like to move around. Some entrepreneurs, by the way, are kinesthetic learners, and that's why they were so impatient and so antsy in school. They felt like getting up, sitting down, throwing stuff, and so on. Now, here's an interesting discovery. There's a remarkable connection between the head and the hand. And when you write something by hand, as opposed to typing it, you activate your visual, auditory, and kinesthetic learning modalities altogether. When you write it, you see it. When you write it, you sub-vocalize it. You say the words to yourself. And when you write it, you use your hand and your arm to write it down, which dramatically increases the speed at which you learn something. You'll find that all rapid learners are note-takers. They're constantly taking notes, and the very act of writing them down dramatically increases the speed at which they can learn it. Now, in order to engage in rapid learning, you need to create a good learning environment. You need to create a good place or space. First of all, you need a room where you can be quiet and uninterrupted. It's interesting, before the television and the radio age, all successful people took periods out of their daily life to learn. They had a learning period in the morning after getting up. They had a learning period in the midday. They had a learning period later on. What we use today for entertainment, they used for learning. And they always established a place and a routine where they could stop and sit down and just start learning, reading, reflecting, taking notes, and so on. So get a nice room where you can be quiet. And here's one of the most important of all keys to learning, to rapid learning, to accelerated learning. It's to play gentle classical music in the background. It's interesting, you have heard a lot of songs when you were growing up. And sometimes those songs can come on the radio again, and you can instantly remember all the words because the words were played in a company with music. So what happens is your brain remembered the words, and just one chord from the song, like I remember the Beatles, where it starts off with that strong chord, bum, and you think, it's a hard day's night. And the words come instantly when you hear the first chord. Well, when you are studying with classical music in the background, you provide the words. And so the music is playing in the background, and classical music has what is called the genius effect. And sometimes they call it the Mozart effect. When you play classical music, it seems to open up your mind and dramatically increase your ability to learn and remember. Also, when you play classical music, you can study for longer periods of time. If you have no classical music playing, then your brain will get tired. But what I do is I actually wear earphones with classical music playing, and I find that I can work for long hours at a very high level of productivity because this classical music is going through my brain hour after hour. Very, very important. Now, people say, can I play music that has words on it? No, because instead of remembering what you're studying, your brain will remember the words of the songs. And afterwards, you won't even have tried, but afterwards, you'll recall the words to the song, and that's not what you want. So play Mozart, play Beethoven, play Bach, play relaxation music, play meditation music, play anything that relaxes your brain. Now, another thing about super learning is resolve to study in 2 to 3 hour blocks. If you're really serious about a subject, it's impossible to learn a subject by just tearing a piece out of it here and there. Very, very difficult. What you need is you need to sort of settle down into learning, just like writers have to settle down and put aside 3 to 4 hour blocks each day during which they write. To learn, you have to put aside periods of time where you can just concentrate on learning for that time. And what happens as you get into the learning, you get deeper and deeper into it, almost like you're getting deeper and deeper into a pool, and you learn more and more as you spend more time at it. So if you give yourself 2 to 3 hours, you can learn an extraordinary amount. When I began to study languages, you know, my own story you probably know, is I didn't graduate from high school and I worked at laboring jobs for several years. And then I set off to see the world. And the first thing I realized is that where I was going, which was Africa at this time, they didn't speak English. In much of Africa, they only spoke French. So I began to study French. And I developed some methodologies for learning French, but one of them was extended periods of time. By the time I got to France, I was speaking rudimentary French. By the time I got out of France, I was speaking better French. By the time I got into North Africa, Morocco, Algeria, and so on, where they only spoke French and Arabic, I could speak enough French to literally live comfortably. I was conversant in the language. And this is a person who failed class after class after class in school. I just studied how to learn a language. And we'll talk about that in a couple of seconds. And now the final thing for super learning, pay attention to what you're learning. Put aside all distractions, no radio, no television, no conversation. Get really focused and really pay close attention to it. Resolve to listen carefully and to read carefully. Imagine that what you're learning is really important. Imagine you're going to have a test, and one of the things you're learning is going to be the decisive element of the test, whether you pass it or not. Another way is imagine that you will be required to report back on what you've learned. Is that somebody's going to ask you tomorrow what you learned tonight? This is called dual-plane learning. We'll come to that in a second. When you think about teaching or telling somebody else what you're learning, you actually remember it at two levels and twice as much. Now, how do you remember names? I promised I would teach you that. I have developed the ability to meet 10 people in a row and remember all their names. However, if I don't use the method, I will forget the names just like everybody else does. So here's what you do. First of all, make a decision that you resolve that you will remember the names of the people that you're going to meet. It's interesting. It's sort of like putting your hands on the wheel of your mind and turning the wheel. Make a decision, by gum, I'm going to remember. That's very, very important. Most people don't do that. So they're introduced to somebody and say, hi, how are you? My name is blah, blah. And they go on to the next person. And they forget it completely. But make a decision. And what I do is I imagine I'm going to meet someone who's very wealthy and powerful who is going to do me a major favor if I remember their name later on today. Just doing that will double and triple the likelihood of remembering the person's name. Now, the second thing is when a person gives you the name, listen carefully. Lean in as though what this person is telling you is priceless. Lean in and listen closely to the name and make sure that you've got it. Repeat it back to assure clarity. Is that Dexter or Jexter? Is that Harold or Howard? In other words, say it aloud to the other person. The person says, it's Howard. And then what I do to myself is I say, quietly, I say to myself, I say, Howard, 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 Howard. I say it 5 or 6 times as fast as I can to try to remember it. It's a trick. And then the fourth is to associate the name with something familiar. Now, the easiest way that I found to remember people's names is to associate their name with someone else who has the same name. Like I was talking to someone recently and his name was Robbie Wilson. So I thought, who do I know named Robbie? Who do I know named Wilson? And I thought of one person named Robbie that I know here and someone else with the last name Wilson there. So I thought of both of those names. The next time I met him, a few minutes later, I knew his name and I still got the name today. So see if you can't think of someone who has both names. And what that does is it hooks it into your memory, it associates it so that next time you see him, you remember. Another way that people remember names is looking at facial characteristics. Look at their eyes, look at their eyebrows, look at their forehead, look at the shape of their mouth, look at their hair, and so on, and see if you can't find something the person has. Let's say Mary, and her hair is spiky, so you say Hairy Mary. And next time you see the person, the hairy falls away, and you remember Mary. Now, a fifth way to remember names is ask how he or she spells their name. People are flattered. People feel that their name is the most important word in the language. When you ask them, how do they spell their name? Well, the name is Huckabee. Well, how do you spell it? Huckabee, H-U-C-K-A-B-E-E. Here's another way of remembering, and you pronounce the spelling. Do you know the origin of your name? And they say, well, the origin of my name is my parents came from Ireland, my mother came from England, and so on and so forth. And they'll tell you the origin of their name because people are fascinated by their names. And as they tell you the origin, we're talking about 20, 30 seconds of conversation here, you will again hook that name in deeper and deeper. And often, you will remember that person, you'll see them a month or a year later, and you still remember the connections. And finally, jot the person's name down on a notepad. I use all of these tricks, if you like. When a person gives me their name, as soon as I turn away from them, I jot the name down, just so I don't forget it. And the very act of jotting it down doubles and triples the likelihood that you'll remember it. If the person gives you a business card, immediately you finish talking to them, write on the back of their business card what you talked about. Came from Ireland, mother was from England, worked in this field, started here. Whatever you can think of, jot it down on the back of the business card. Remember, you cannot imagine how flattering it is to people when you remember their name after a brief meeting because they've forgotten yours. By the way, when you meet a person who you've met before and you have the advantage because you know their name, assume that they forget yours. And always reintroduce yourself and give them your name. They really appreciate it. Hi, I'm Brian Tracy. Remember we spoke earlier. Just always give them your name in advance. Don't expect people to remember. So how do you read at 1,000 words a minute? Well, I have taken rapid learning courses over the years. I've taught rapid learning. I have read thousands of books and thousands of articles. I read 4 newspapers a day, 2 books a week, 35 magazines a month. Plus, I keep current with everything that's going on. And so I must be doing something right. So let me give you the ways. First of all, again, resolve to read quickly rather than slowly. All the studies of speed reading find that people read one word at a time rather than reading smoothly to get the sense of the sentence. Now, speed reading is a learnable skill. Many years ago, there was a craze throughout North America called the Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics. And you can still buy the Evelyn Wood course on CD with manuals and take it yourself. What they learned is the only way people are going to learn to speed read is go to courses where they are put through specific exercises. But what Evelyn Wood claimed and what her heirs claim today is that in the course of 12 weeks, one course per week, you will learn how to double or triple your reading speed and increase your retention rate to 80% or above. I took the Evelyn Wood course, and in the first lesson, I tripled my reading speed and got my retention level by test up to past 80%. And they knew that, and everything else is just simply to repeat until it becomes a habit to read fast. So, here's how you read a book. By the way, one of the most important things about reading books, and books are sort of like eating protein, eating steak, or highly nutritious foods, is there's something very different from a book or an article. An article is sort of like fast food, it's like popcorn, but a book is what contains meat and content that can actually change your life because there's so much material there. So the very best way to save several hours in reading a book is to throw it away without reading it at all. Remember that. Many books are not relevant, they're not applicable, they're not written by experts, and they're not fun or enjoyable to read. I started reading a book on a subject which I found very interesting, on the Peloponnesian War, written by a leading historian, well-reviewed in the academic journals. And I read the book, and I read it for several hours, and I finally threw it away because it was just too heavy. The book had too many details. The details ran together. It was very hard to sort out what was happening, who was causing it to happen. It was just a poorly put together book. And I could have spent several more hours just plowing through the rest of the book. But I finally thought, this is just not a good use of time, because you know what? If it's hard to read, you won't remember a single word. You'll just chuck it. So the best way to save money with a book is if you realize that you're not enjoying reading this book, just chuck it, because you won't remember a word unless it grabs you, unless it's enjoyable. So how do you read? You use what is called the Opier method. And this is a way that you can get the ability to go through a book in 60 minutes. And to remember about 80% of what's in it. And the Opier method is O-P-I-R. And the 4 letters stand for O, overview. What you do is you look at the front of the book, and you look at the back of the book, and then you open it up and you read the jacket, and then you read the testimonials, and you look at the table of contents. This is just a quick overview. Very often, like when I go to bookstores all the time, I can take a quick overview of a book and put it right back on the shelf. I realize it's not a subject that I'm interested in, or it's not a subject that I'm most interested in. The person is writing, and most books written by academics or professors are boring as ditch water and completely unrealistic. especially business books. Never read a business book written by a professor. They're just almost always, not always, but almost always a complete waste of time. Because these people have never been out in the real world. The only time you read a book written by someone who teaches at the university is if it says in the review that this person has worked with countless corporations and applied their ideas and is a highly valued consultant to corporations. Then the person has practical knowledge. So take a quick look back and forth, front and back, and inside the table of contents. That's the O. Second is called the preview. Now, the preview is you take the book and you set it down in front of you and you read it through quickly. You turn the pages rapidly. And what this does is it gives you a sense for how the book is laid out. You see the major headings, the titles, the graphs, the illustrations, the titles of each chapter, the titles of the paragraphs. And as you read, you get a sense for the way the book is laid out and where the information is. Now, if at this point you are still interested in the subject, you have a great advantage because now you can read what is called on purpose. Reading on purpose means that you are reading looking for practical ideas that you can use. When you read a nonfiction book, by the way, or you go to college, very often there will be a series of questions at the end of a chapter. Now, here's one of the most incredible ways to double and triple your reading speed in nonfiction. Go and read the questions carefully and think, what could the answers be? Then, when you read the chapter, look for the answers. You'll be astonished at how fast your mind just will whip and stop and whip and stop and whip and stop at the answers. When you're reading on purpose, you read faster, you read better, and you learn and retain more than if you're just kind of turning pages. So in the preview, you just go through all the pages so you get a sense of where things are and the sense of the things that you'd be interested in coming back to. Now, the next letter, I, in the OPIR formula stands for in view. This is where you read the book completely from cover to cover. You just go from first page to last page. And when you read, always read with your finger. This is the key to speed reading. Run your finger under the line and just run it quickly under the line. And the faster you can run your finger under the line from left to right, the faster you can move down the page. Over time, you can read two lines at once. And as you get faster and faster, you actually start to read with an S shape. You'll start to move your finger like an S down the page, and your brain will be sucking up all the meaning on the page. But start off reading one sentence at a time with your finger under it. For the rest of your life, when you read newspapers, books, articles, anything, always read with your finger. Because other than that, your mind will jump up and down and often become distracted, and you go on to something else. When you're reading with your mind, it keeps you focused on the words right above your finger. So read the book completely from page to page as fast as you possibly can. Now here's an important point. Some books are meant to be read in their entirety. Some books are worth buying because they have one chapter on one subject that's relevant to you. When I was doing my courses on closing techniques, I bought dozens of books on selling. And what I would do is I would just go to the chapter or chapters on closing. I'd only read the chapters on closing at that time. I may go back and read the chapters on other areas at other times, but at that point, I was putting together a complete course on closing, so I would go straight to the chapter on just the subject that was important to me. And I was much more motivated. I was reading on purpose. I learned at a higher level, and I eventually came up with some of the finest closing programs in the world today. So sometimes you can just read one chapter, and by doing the preview, you'll find exactly the chapter that's important to you, and then don't read the other chapters, or at least don't read them now. Read them later. And finally, the last R in the OPIR formula is review. That's where you flip through to read the noted parts. Now, this is an important point. When you read, always read with a red pen. Mark that book up so it's like a rainbow, like it's like a candy cane or a barber's pole. When we were growing up, we were told, don't put a mark in your book because someone else will need the book. But not anymore. Today, when you get a book, that's your book. You buy it. Don't go to the library, by the way, and get books. You know, it takes you more time, based on the amount you earn per hour, to go back and forth to the library than it would for you to go onto Amazon or go to a bookstore and just buy the darn book so you own it for life and you have it at your fingertips. And when you read, constantly make notes. There are some books that I've read 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Each time I read them, I use a different color pen. I'll start off with red, and then I'll go to blue, and then I'll go to black, and then I'll go to green, and then I'll go to brown, and then I'll go to highlighters and so on, so that I can tell when I've read it. And it's amazing how much more rapidly you remember the material if you've underlined it and put notes on it. then what I do after I've gone through and with a red pen and put notes in the margin, I put exclamation points, quote marks, I underline key parts, I circle paragraphs, I put stars, I turn down pages, I put arrows and things like that on the key points. And then I'll go through and I dictate my noted parts. So I'll go through with the dictaphone and I'll just go through and I'll dictate all the parts that I thought were really important, which are basically the essence of the book, and I'll have them typed up. Once I get them typed up, I will review all the notes. Do you know how long it takes you to review the notes of an entire 300-page book? About 10 minutes. So you review after 1 week, you review after 1 month, you review after 6 months, review after 1 year. With six reviews through this methodology, it takes a total of about an hour and a half, you'll have retained about 80% of any nonfiction book. It's amazing how fast you can do it. And remember, use your hand like a windshield wiper under the sentences. That's the key to rapid learning. Now, how do you learn a language? Well, when I started off, as I told you before, I failed high school English. By the time I was finished, I got a 799 on the SAT. When I went back to university in my 30s, that's 799 out of 800. It's almost a perfect score in verbal because my English was so good by that time. And why? It's because I studied with a dictionary. I read a dictionary. My kids now call me the human dictionary. They'll bring me a list of 10 words they have to have definitions for from school, and I'll give them the answers faster for me to give them the answers they think than to look up the meanings themselves. Now, when I began to learn languages, I found an interesting thing is you try to learn a language at the same level at which you speak your native tongue. So I started off learning French when I went to Europe, and then I learned German, and then I learned Spanish when I went to Latin America. And I found some fabulous ideas for learning languages. So I'm now conversant in all three languages. Plus, I speak some Swahili, I speak some Greek, I speak some Latin, I speak some Italian, I speak some Russian, I speak some Thai, and so on. I've learned smatterings of languages by using the same methodologies. And what I found, by the way, is I failed all my language courses until I found a way, because most languages are taught in a way that's really hard to learn. So how do you learn a language? First of all, number one, remember the best language learning materials are available today. One of the most exciting breakthroughs comes from what is called Rosetta Stone, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, Stone. And this method of learning is sweeping America. It's been used by governments, corporations. It's a combination of CDs, auditory, visual exercises, and so on. And you can go on to the internet and get Rosetta Stone, or you can get them in airports and all kinds of places. They're also advertised in magazines and so on. So don't be cheap in learning a language. This is really important because your time is very, very valuable. If there's a method that can help you to learn a language quickly, by all means, jump on it. The language must be relevant and applicable to your life. You can't learn a language that's of no value. People say to me, what language should I learn? And I say, the language you should learn is probably Spanish. Why is that? Well, it's because Spanish is relevant to us in North America, because Latinos are now the second largest foreign language grouping. You will be able to use Spanish every time you go to a restaurant, check into a hotel. And I have good friends who have resolved to become fluent in Spanish and did it and opened up an entire new market, not only in North America, but throughout Latin America for their products and for their companies. So the language is really relevant. And if you learn a little bit of Spanish, you can literally look up and there's somebody there who speaks Spanish, and you can speak Spanish to them. People say, well, I should learn Mandarin, or I should learn Japanese. Well, I'm going to tell you this. To learn an Asian language takes 5 years. It takes 5 years and 5,000 hours of work, the equivalent of getting a degree in neurosurgery or astrophysics. And you can only use the language when you go there. And when you know their language, they're very cautious in dealing with you because language is an advantage that they have. They can talk about you in your presence without you knowing. Learning Japanese is the same thing. Learning Russian takes 5 years. If you don't learn it in infancy, it's extraordinarily hard. Spanish, you can be up and running in Spanish within a few hours because Spanish is the easiest language for an English speaker to learn, followed by French, followed by Italian. Then you go across the Rhine and you go into German and some of the Eastern European languages, they become harder and harder. So learn languages that are relevant and applicable to you today, something that can improve your life or improve your work. Now, with my own story, what I did is I started with what are called the Made Simple books. I was poor when I started off learning French, so I went to the bookstore, and there's a book called French Made Simple. It's got 42 lessons. And what it teaches is it teaches the pronunciation of each vowel and consonant, and vowels and consonants together. Now, this doesn't seem very important to you, but it was extraordinarily important to me. And then I would test it with other people. I'd get friends who would help me, who spoke the language. So what I learned is I learned how to speak the words correctly, to pronounce them correctly, so that if somebody said a word to me, like hablemos, I could be able to look in the dictionary, because in my mind I could see how that word was spelled. And I used to carry a dictionary for years when I was learning a language, until I finally knew so much of the languages that I found myself carrying the dictionary and never opening it. So I learned it, and even today, even though I'm not fluent in a language, I'm conversant, people will say, you speak with no accent. You have no accent at all. It's because I learned the language from the first vowels and consonants with no accent. The second thing is I learned the salutations and the numbers and the common questions and phrases. In other words, learn how to say hello, learn how to say thank you, learn how to say please, learn how to say where is, learn the numbers, learn the days of the week and so on, so that you can use them immediately. When you use them immediately and get immediate responses, it's amazing how much more motivated you are, not only to learn more of the language, but to use the language. And finally, when you study languages, you need to study for 2 to 3 hour uninterrupted blocks. Language learning is a special form of learning where you're actually developing new brain cells and you're actually opening up a whole new part of your brain. This has been identified by MRI scans. When you're a child, you learn within one particular part of your brain. When you're an adult and you learn a language, your brain opens up a whole new department. And the only way you can really work in that department is by studying intensely for 2 to 3 hours at a time. Now, interestingly enough about languages, the languages have anywhere from 150 to 650,000 words. However, 1,200 words in any language constitute about 90% of the conversation used in that language. The average English speaker uses about 1,200 words 90% of the time. And that covers almost everything that they do, radio, television, conversation, work, everything else. Now, if you go up to 4,000 words, 4,000 words covers about 95% of conversation. In other words, with 4,000 words, you become functionally fluent in a language. And what I used to do is I used to sort of have a game. When I started to learn each of my languages, and I knew this, I would start off with a race to learn 1,200 words. I would race to learn the words. I would review the words in the dictionary at the back of the language book, and my whole goal was concentrate on memorizing 1,200 words. And at that point, I was functionally fluent in the language and was for life. Then, if I wanted to move up so I could actually have business conversations or even, best of all, speak from a public platform, then I'd have to go to 4,000 words. And that would take much longer. It takes about 500 to 1,000 hours of study to master a language. Anybody who tells you you can do it in 10 hours is not telling you the truth. And so you always have to say, am I willing to invest this number of hours to master this language? And if I am, I better master a language that I can get a lot of use out of. The way that you learn a language is simpler. Resolve to learn 5 to 10 words per day. Now, that's not a lot. If you look at a language, initially it's overwhelming, but if you decide to learn 5 to 10 words, you can do that. That's not a big deal. And then what you do is you write them down and repeat them and combine them. What I used is a stenographer's notebook where I would write the word on one side and the meaning on the other. Word on one side, meaning on the other. And on a regular basis, I would just review my lists of words and say them aloud. Saying them aloud correctly locks them into your brain. It activates your auditory learning modality. Now, I got to the point where I could learn 50, 60, 70, even 80 words a day with one lesson. And I didn't know anything about what I was doing until I later read that this is a secret. And the critical thing is association. So what you do is you take the words and you associate them with something funny, something outrageously funny, or something ridiculous, or something that's sexy, or even something that's dirty, if you like. If you can think of something sexy or lewd or risque to connect a word to, what happens is later on, the association falls away and the word remains in your memory. So just something to try. So every time you think of a word, think of something crazy that goes with it. Think of something funny. Think of something stimulating. Listen to language audio programs in your car. When you do, start them, stop them, repeat them, and recite them aloud. The wonderful thing about CD or audio learning is you can stop it and repeat it and continue. Stop, repeat, and continue. And it's amazing. Stop, repeat, and say it out loud. This is really important. Reading it out loud, saying it out loud when you're studying, dramatically increases the speed at which you retain it. Once you start to get mastery of the language, get a tutor for conversation. Not someone to teach you the words on the page, but someone to talk to who can correct your conversation. Initially, it's very nerve-wracking to have a tutor, but over time, you start to get more and more fluent. Write out complete sentences and memorize them. This is a very powerful technique for learning a language, is write out a complete, grammatically correct sentence and say it over and over again, and then write out another sentence. I've known people who've gone to foreign countries as speakers, and what they do is they'll learn two or three paragraphs. They will memorize those paragraphs. They may not even know the meanings of the words, but they'll memorize the paragraphs so that they can say them perfectly, and they'll get up in front of the audience. This happens in diplomacy, it happens in politics, it happens in business, it happens in professional speaking, and they'll start off with a big smile, and they will say two or three paragraphs, and the audience literally falls off their chair. And after that, they'll say, you know, I'm not fluent in the language, so I'm going to use an interpreter, but I just wanted to start off by letting you know that I admire and respect your language. If you do that, you'll be absolutely astonished. And then you'll find yourself motivated to learn more languages as well. Okay, how do you learn to memorize? The keys to learning to memorize are very simple. First of all, resolve in advance that you can and will remember, especially lists of things. Pay attention. Repeat what you're trying to memorize over and over in your mind. And use a mnemonic. A mnemonic is a visual or rhyming list of items that you hook things into. Hooking things is very powerful. For example, the most powerful mnemonic is taught by Dale Carnegie and many others, is you take the word one and it rhymes with gun. So when you think of going to the supermarket to pick up some milk, what you do is you say one gun and you imagine shooting a container of milk and it going splattering all over the place. So the next time you say one, wham, you see milk. You say two, shoe. So you think the next thing I need is Pepsi. So you think of a shoe kicking a bottle of Pepsi across the room. Then when you go to the grocery store, all you'll see when you say two, you'll see the Pepsi bottle spinning across. Three, tree. Let's say you're thinking of getting apples. So you see a tree full of apples bending down to the ground. So when you say three, tree, you'll see the apples hanging from the tree. Four is door. You see what you're looking for stuck to a door. Five is hive, like a beehive. You see bees buzzing around the item you're trying to remember. Six are sticks. You see sticks sticking into what you're trying to remember. Seven stands for heaven. You see what you're looking for rising up in the sky and disappearing into heaven. You see eight rhymes with gate. So you see what you're trying to remember hanging on a gate, swinging back and forth. Nine rhymes with tine, like the tine of a fork. So you see what you're thinking of stuck on a fork. And 10 rhymes with hen. So you see a hen sitting on top of what you're trying to remember. Now once you've memorized these, 1, gun, 2, shoe, 3, tree, 4, door, 5, hive, 6, stick, 7, heaven, 8, gate, 9, tine, 10, hen, then you can take a list of 10 things and you can create an association with each of them and you'll have all 10 in your mind. And the more often you use this rhyming mnemonic, the quicker it is for you to remember a list of 10 things. When I do a seminar, I will have 7 to 10 points, and I'll remember the 7 to 10 points. 1, gun, 2, shoe, 3, tree, and I'll get up there and I'll be able to talk for an hour without reference to notes. And people say, how can you remember all that stuff? Well, I just remember the trigger word, which triggers the thought, which enables me to speak on the subject. Sometimes you can sing a list of items to a common song, like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, you know, Pepsi and apples and butter and soap. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or happy birthday, or happy Pepsi to me, happy Pepsi to me. And you can just sing little songs, and the music causes you to remember it almost indefinitely. Now, one final way to trigger your memory, to develop a tremendous memory, if you're thinking of a person's name, and your name escapes you, or you're thinking the name of a movie, you think the name of a book, go through the alphabet to trigger the memory of a lost word or name. And what I do is I'll say A, B, C, D, E, F, G, Jerry. Jerry, that's the person's name. Or J, K, L, M, M, Michael. Mike, Michael, that's the name of the movie. And so when you repeat the letters to yourself, very often the letter will trigger your memory of a lost word or name. Just a technique to try. Now, you can accelerate your speed of learning and retention by recognizing these final points. First of all, you learn best at the beginning and at the end of a learning session when you're most alert. So be really alert when you start and review when you finish. Two, when you study a subject before going to bed, your subconscious mind processes and internalizes what you've learned while you sleep. a study session in the evening, stopping, you know, around 9 o'clock so your brain can relax and settle down, often your subconscious mind will process what you learned overnight and you'll wake up with most of it retained permanently. The third point is use affirmations. Keep saying, I can learn this. I learn and remember easily and well. I can learn this. I'm really smart. I have a great memory. I learn and remember easily and well. Talk to yourself in positive terms, which programs your subconscious mind to make you an excellent learner. Visualize. Number four, visualize. Create a clear mental picture of what you're learning and create a picture of yourself using what you've learned. What we have found is that whenever you are trying to remember something, you roll your eyes upward. So one of the ways to remember something is to recite it and then roll your eyes upward and see it in your mind's eye. And what that does is it seems to roll it into your permanent memory. Fifth way to increase your speed of learning and retention is to use your new information as quickly as possible. Practice as fast as you can. If you're in a seminar, don't wait until next week to use the stuff. Use it at the break. Go and make a telephone call. Try something out on your way home. Use it first thing tomorrow morning. The faster you practice what you've learned, the faster you hook it in. Number six, as we said earlier, practice dual plane learning. This means learning on two planes simultaneously. As you learn, imagine teaching the subject to someone else. Imagine someone else who'd love to learn this and think of yourself as you're hearing it, reading it, or learning it from a teacher. Imagine teaching someone else the same thing. And finally, number seven, practice repetition over and over. Repetition is the mother of learning. There's nobody smarter than you, nobody's better than you. If somebody has learned more than you have, they just repeated it more often. People are always saying, how is it that you can give a seminar for several hours without notes? It's because I've gone over it hundreds of times, and I do. Every single day, every morning before I begin speaking, I review all my notes from beginning to end again so that they're really fresh in my mind. You have the ability to learn any subject that you need to learn to accomplish any goal that you can set for yourself. As I said, Peter Drucker once wrote that the only skill that will not be obsolete in the 21st century will be the skill of learning new skills. So turn yourself into a do-it-to-yourself project. Select the one skill that can help you the most in your life and career at this moment and dedicate yourself to becoming better and better in that area. Read 30 to 60 minutes each day in your field. Underline, make notes. This will amount to one book per week, 50 books per year, and 500 books in the next 10 years. This alone will make you highly paid, successful, and rich. Listen to educational audio programs in your car. Turn your car into a moving classroom, a university on wheels. The average person sits behind the wheel 500 to 1,000 hours each year. This is the equivalent of 3 to 6 months of 40-hour weeks. This is the equivalent of 1 to 2 full-time university semesters. By turning your car into a learning machine, you can become one of the best educated people in your field. Become aggressive about learning. Attend seminars in your field given by experts. Take careful notes. Sit up in front, by the way. Use the material that you learn as soon as you can. And finally, use the miracle of the internet to learn new subjects anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Internet learning, especially with our Brian Tracy University online, is becoming one of the great miracles of success in the world today. So be sure to take advantage of internet learning as well as everything else we've talked about. Remember, nobody's smarter than you, nobody's better than you. If somebody's doing better than you, they have more knowledge and skills than you at this time. And whatever hundreds of thousands and millions of other people have done, you can do as well by just simply committing yourself to becoming a rapid learner for the rest of your life. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.